Welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Unity.
It's hour number two of the Vinny Eastwood Show. Show that's all about unity and scumbaggery. Broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And also want to mention, me and Christopher Green have both noticed this, that our listeners have kind of, when you're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com in the stream, what happens is how some networks have got like really good show hosts, and the person on after them is kind of, you know, bit kind of lame, and you sort of turn it off, that kind of thing. It doesn't happen at American Freedom Radio. It's consistently really wacky, wicked, awesome in its own way show every single time. It's really awesome, and I beg everybody, you know, listen to the Vinny Eastwood Show, and don't just listen to me. Listen to the people before me, the people after me. Have a look at the archives that are available there, even past and present shows. There really is a lot available there, and it's all thanks to Danny Romero, who, well, just has an eye for talent, gave me my show and everything. So thank you very much, Danny. And we have somebody else who's remarkably talented as well, who's basically like the Uber figure who nobody... Everybody knows his name. Nobody knows his face. It's Max Egan from Australia. Welcome, Shabaro.
Hey, Vinny. Nice to be on the show again, brother.
Mm-mm. You know what made me want you to have you on again, mate?
Yeah, well, you know, I'll have to show my face someday, but yeah, it's kind of a game I'm playing, so I'm kind of winning at the moment. I like that.
Yeah. Well, I decided to have you on today because I was watching the news on... I think it was on TV3 News, and they mentioned Chappelle Corby and how she's been going through some real hard, traumatic mental problems and whatever, and they want to, you know, perhaps reduce her sentence. And in Indonesia, this only happens when the person admits to guilt, which Chappelle has never admitted. But guess how they referred to Chappelle Corby?
Oh, convicted drug smuggler, Chappelle Corby?
Yes!
Yeah, of course, yeah, mind control. They always do it. They always, it's just, you know, neuro-linguistic programming. That's all it is. They want you to make that association. I mean, the unfortunate news about that is that the clemency has been on the table with the president of Indonesia for actually over a year now. And, they're just bringing it up and making it all public now because of all the stuff that's coming out with the Expendable Project. There's been a new report, put on the Expendable Project website that basically blows the whole thing open. It shows that the Australian Federal Police know she's innocent. They've known she's innocent since 2005. They've just never done anything about it. And, you know, there were people who admitted to being the ones who smuggled the drugs. And the Expendable TV, the film Expendable, has absolutely got to so many people. There's been huge campaigns to hand this film out to everybody. I've burnt literally hundreds and hundreds of copies and handed this disc out to people. And I know that other people around the country are. So, you know, you've got this stony silence from the mainstream media. Not a word mentioned about all of this evidence that's come out from the Expendable website, which proves her innocence, which shows the guilt of the politicians and the complicity of the Australian Federal Police. The website itself is being totally looked into and gone through with a fine-tooth comb by the New South Wales Crime Commission and the Federal Police. It's all there in the records and the logs of the website. You can see who's scouring the site looking for information. And we've got stony silence coming from the media, and then suddenly we have this big news report about clemency for Chappelle, which has actually been on the table for a year. But they're bringing it out now to try to, you know, detract people, you know, let them think that, you know, you don't have to worry about it. It's all being taken care of, you know. I mean, Chappelle's in a really bad way. I don't even think she knows about the Expendable Project. She's just in a very, very bad way in the cells there. She's on medication all the time. She's been locked up there for 8 years now.
See, that medication will kill her just as bad as the environment will.
Yeah, well, that's what they want. I mean, they'd love it if she just sort of died in there and just the whole thing went away. I mean, that would be the ultimate goal for them. You know what I mean? So what we have to do is keep the pressure on, keep spreading this film, keep sharing the website, expendable.tv. And get the word out to everybody, because just the fact that they've brought this clemency out and they've made it all public like this now shows that they're running scared. They're absolutely terrified of the
the
information.
The timing of it suggests the timing of it suggests no other cause.
Absolutely, mate. It's damage control. That's all it is. Nothing more.
So hold on a second. This means that we got him on the ropes.
Just keep pushing. Absolutely keep pushing. I mean, everything they're doing, Vinny, the legislation they've just brought in New Zealand, the search and surveillance bill and all that. I mean, they're doing this, these are defensive moves. You know what I'm saying? Because the truth's getting so out there to people. So they're freaking out and they're trying to lock everything down. And the quicker they lock it all down, they're making mistakes. They're waking more people up because now the people who didn't even believe there was a problem are seeing things like this bill get brought in and they're going, well, hang on a minute. Didn't we fight a world war to prevent our governments bringing in bills like this? Wasn't that what they were doing in Germany? You know?
Don't you think it's like the failure of Fabian socialism is that once it gets to the point where it starts to be exposed, it stops becoming Fabian and starts becoming fascist and straight in your face. And a fascist only gets exposed when it starts acting like one.
Exactly. And so that's what's going on, which is causing a lot of people to wake up. And it's going to happen. I mean, the more negative they make it, the more people are going to wake up because that's just the way it works. And they're running scared, mate. The amount of legislation they've brought in and the fact of them bringing all this Chappelle clemency thing up. And I mean, they're scared. They're terrified of the amount of people that are waking up to what's going on. And, you know, the stony silence of the media is phenomenal. The silence is deafening, you know, because the information that's come out through expendable.tv and the reports that they've issued on the website, all the emails and the correspondence between the police stations, everything, it shows that the whole thing was a scam. You know, they withheld so much information from the trial and they ensured that she was convicted. It shows the media complicity. It shows everything. And there's absolute stony silence. I mean, this information is huge and it's not being reported at all on the mainstream media. Not one single word. All we hear is this plea for clemency, this suggestion that clemency's now been put on the table, she's going to be saved. Well, guess what, folks? It's been on the table for a year, and she's still in there. So don't think that this is going to change anything and keep the pressure up.
Yeah, exactly. They try to appease us, you know. It's like, oh, we'll just give you a little bit of a scrap from the table, but we'll still be here, you know, with all the big hams and juicy turkeys for ourselves, you know. These people are greedy. What are they greedy for in this particular case, Max? I mean, is Australia basically just kind of offering up this girl as a sacrifice to maintain good relations with the most populous Muslim nation in the world, Indonesia?
Well, basically what it was all about was to cover up the drug smuggling that happened at the airport. See, that's the thing with the whole Chappelle Corby case. If Chappelle's innocent, you know, you can't really blame the Indonesian government. You don't know that their policy is to impose hideous sentences upon people who bring drugs into their country. That's just what they do. So you don't take drugs into the country, and you wouldn't take drugs into the country, especially drugs that are worth 10 times as much here as what they are there. So the issue is, how did the drugs, if they weren't Chappelle's, what were they doing in her luggage? Where did that come from? So that indicates that there's drug smuggling that goes on at Australian airports, and the Australian Federal Police are heavily involved in Australian airports. Sydney Airport's run by Macquarie Bank, you know, that's who owns Sydney Airport. So you've got all of these interests that don't want it
known. That's a good ability to money launder, don't you think, having a bank in on the action?
You think? They own the airport, mate. So, you know, you've got all of these interests that don't want the people of Australia to know that there's all of this stuff going on behind the scenes in the airports. Because there is. I mean, there was recent reports came out in the Sun Herald of the customs officers being accused of drug smuggling in Australian airports. I mean, it's just...
The price of marijuana alone, like, let's say, what, 4.5 kilos or something like that, was worth like 40 grand in Australia. And yet she was taking it to Indonesia where it was worth 8 grand?
Yeah, or even less. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. So, see, that's the problem. See, it wasn't that she was a sacrificial lamb. It's just that they needed, this drugs had gotten through. So they just, whoops, it's in her bag. Okay, we'll let her hang for it. Because otherwise we have to admit that it was ours, and that's going to cause an investigation into the baggage handlers and Sydney Airport, Brisbane Airport, the whole aircraft system. Oh my God, our airports aren't secure. We're in a post 9/11 world where we spent all this money supposedly securing our airports, and we screen our passengers and put the citizens through hell. And here we are having kilos and kilos of drugs shipped around the country.
Realizing, Max, that there's no defense against an inside job.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's why Chappelle was found guilty, and that's why the government has always washed their hands of it. That's why there was such an effort undertaken to smear the entire family, to make it guilt by association. Even if her father was a pot smoker or whatever they claim he was, which everybody says he wasn't, you know, if you speak to anybody from the family, they all say, no, none of this is true, and you'll find that there's no drug charges against any of these people. And yet if you speak to anybody on the street, anywhere within 100 miles of the Gold Coast, and you start talking to this about it, you know what they say? They say, oh, look, I knew them. I knew them, and they were always into smoking pot. I go, oh, really? You know, they must have known everybody. Gee, the Corby family must have known everybody in southeast Queensland and northern New South Wales who live within a 100-mile radius of their house. They must have been the most popular people on the planet because everybody you speak to says, I knew them, you know? And you think, yeah, right, of course you do, mate. Of course you do, you know? It's unbelievable, mate, just the mind control people are under. You know, but there's charges. No charges ever been brought against any of the family. So there was all of this smear campaign undertaken. But even if he was a pot smoker or whatever he was, what's that got to do with her? You know, my father was an air traffic controller who was a pilot. Like, should I be guilty of bombing Japan because my father was a World War II pilot? You know, I mean, how does it fit in? You know, whatever my father did, it's got nothing to do with me. And it's the same with Chappelle Corby. Whatever her father's into, whatever her sister's into, whatever anybody that isn't her is into, it isn't anything to do with her. You know? That's people have this guilt by association thing. And, you know, when a smear campaign is undertaken, if it's a good enough smear campaign on the rest of the family, it's just guilt by association and they write her off. I mean, Australians are terrible like that. They'll always go into bat for the underdog, but they'll always be very, very prepared to hack down the tall poppy. So you think about that. They'll go into bat for the underdog until he makes it, then they want to hack down the tall poppy. It's tall poppy syndrome, you know. It's a bizarre culture.
It's a crab in a bucket syndrome, you know. All the crabs, if they work together, you know, they'll be able to get out. But instead, anytime one guy gets near the edge, the others try to climb up him and just claw him down, and then they're all stuck again.
Yeah, it's funny that, isn't it? That's a very good description of our whole society, really.
And these judges that they've got judging Chappelle Corby, you know, wasn't he like had like 400 cases in front of him, and every single one of them he found the person guilty?
Yeah, absolutely. There was three judges there as well, but I mean the whole thing was a setup. It really, really was. It was a show trial. You know, they'd already, you know, smeared her and done everything they could to ensure she was convicted, and it was an absolute show trial. And because she didn't plead guilty, it was why she got 20 years. I mean, there's been people who've gone in there. One guy got caught with 161 kilos of pot. He was an Indonesian guy. Got caught with 161 kilos of pot. He got 5 years in jail, right? She had 4.2 kilos, and she got 20 years, you know, because she didn't plead guilty. And she still says, you know, she won't plead guilty because she isn't guilty, you know? That's the thing, you know. If she gets released without pleading guilty, then... They're going to owe her so much because they've taken 8 years of her life away from her. They've taken 8 years of the life of an innocent woman. And how do you compensate for that? They've taken this woman off the street and they've locked her into a cell and turned her insane. How do you compensate for that? For a crime she didn't
commit. She can't have children, you know, or have a life, you know. I mean,
she'll never have a life again. She'll never have a life again. Even if she gets out, she'll never have a life. She'll be Chappelle Corby. Everyone's going to want to talk to her. No one's going to leave her alone. You know, and apart from that, she's now suffering severe mental illness because she's been locked in a tiny little cell in a jail that's designed to hold 300 people that has over 1,000 inmates. She's in there for a crime she did not commit. She's been in there for 8 years. She's now clinically insane on medication. Doesn't know what's going on in the world, what's going on with herself. How do you compensate that? You know, she's not even.
You can't reconcile.
She's not even mentally competent to plead guilty now. You know, how can she wouldn't even know what she was saying. So how can she now offer her plea or change her plea to guilty when she's not, you know, she's been diagnosed as clinically insane. So, I mean, this is what happens to you when you lock an innocent person up for so long for a crime they didn't commit. And the way she's just been forgotten, and you know, the way the media is now presenting this whole clemency thing to try to take the heat off themselves, it's just disgusting, mate. It's absolutely disgusting. It makes me ashamed to be an Australian, to be honest, to see this sort of thing going on. It's be one of the biggest shames our country ever has to face, I think, the Schapelle Corby case.
Yeah, absolutely. And it makes me ashamed to be called an Australian as well.
Well, you know, we've got a lot of shame in this country. We've got what's been done to the original inhabitants of this country. What was done in East Timor, how we supported the Indonesian invasion of Timor all those years ago. And the whole world just jumped on the money train with that as well. America, England, everybody just jumped in to sell arms straight away. You know, the death of so many people. And we've got a lot of blood on our hands.
Oh, it was full-on genocide in there. You know, I heard that they were ripping cables out of the walls of people's houses so that they couldn't repair any of their villages. They wouldn't have any cables. They wouldn't have any electricity. They wouldn't have had any infrastructure or anything like that to just completely destroy it.
Oh, it was shocking, mate. They burnt the place out and they starved people out. And when they came down for food, they'd shoot them all. Yeah, it was absolutely shocking, mate. It was absolutely genocide. It was completely supported by the West, the whole lot. And, we got a lot of blood on our hands. And, to think that we've maybe risen above that and then to see something like the Schapelle Corby case happen right in front of your eyes and to see the effort that was gone to by the so-called authorities, you know, the so-called good guys to incarcerate her in the media. I mean, it's shocking.
Yeah. Well, it's the problem with being a good, decent person is you start to see real bad stuff a lot more clearly, and it angers you a lot more than if you were just morally relativistic and you thought that there wasn't an objective what's right and what's wrong. And what's happening to Schapelle Corby is really wrong. We all got to do what's right to save her. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. That's Bill Hicks there. If you have not heard of Bill Hicks or if you haven't listened to his comedy sketches or anything like that, I highly recommend you do. He's an instrumental wake-up tool along with the works of George Carlin and various other comedians. Lewis Black, I think we can probably throw in there as well. You know, having a good laugh about some of these terrible things that go on and that kind of thing and trying to stand, you know, for freedom, truth and justice and all that kind of thing amidst such scumbaggery is a true testament to how strong the human spirit truly is and how hard it is to break at the end of the day. And never place faith in other people so much as you would place faith in yourself, because everybody's just as strong as each other, you know, and if one person can do it, you can too. Have faith in yourself, and you'll do a hell of a lot more than you ever thought you could. Like Max Egan, my very fabulous guest, who has a lot of faith in himself.
Well, you have to, Vinny. You absolutely have to, and you're absolutely right with everything you said there. I mean, and that's why I've sort of done what I've done, and I've often said to people, I'm living proof that you don't have to be somebody, in inverted commas, in order to be heard, to have a voice. All you have to do is be prepared to speak. Because I'm just a nobody, I'm just Max, you know, but I'm prepared to speak out and I'm prepared to be the change that I want to see in the world. And that's the way I live my life. And it's worked for me. So I'm living proof that it does actually work if you can put yourself in the right energetic state. But people are trained not to have faith in themselves. They're given all these yardsticks to measure themselves up by. You know, you've got to be the way we tell you you have to be on the television or the mainstream media. We provide these images of what you should look like and how you should act and whether you're cool or whether you're cute or whatever it is. You know, you've got to be like this or you're a lesser person. And so we don't perceive ourselves to be what we are. We measure ourselves up to all these things that we're given, you know, but by doing that, we miss out on ourselves. We miss out on discovering who we are. We miss out on the power that we all inherently have because we're all incredibly powerful. And we're just trained to believe we're not, and we're trained to remain compliant to a system which really doesn't serve our best interests at all. So it's very clever the way they've done it. But I think if people can just sort of step back from it and really look at themselves for what they are and look at other people around them. I think it's so important to look at the people around you and see yourself in these people. Look to the essence of them, that spark of sentience within every person that makes them a human being, and realize that that's exactly the same as the spark that exists within you. And, you know, when you can see people in that light, you can absolutely change your perspective of reality. Everything changes at that point. And you begin to treat people differently, you begin to treat reality differently, and you begin to see how easy it would be to change everything, to change the whole situation we're facing, if we simply change our perspective, you know.
Because when you treat people differently and you treat reality differently, the same happens. You know, I found, Max, it's amazing. I tell people who I am and what I'm doing, and the generosity and the acceptance they suddenly have for who I am and what I do, just instantly, boom, it's all right there. Because they've seen what I've, because they've heard even after a few seconds what I've already done, you know. And, that's the good thing, because people recognize and are happy to partake in doing the right thing. Okay, so that speaks well of us.
Well, your people are basically good, but we're trained to believe that people are basically bad. You know, the system tells you that, you know, that you know, everyone's out to get you, and that there's a sucker born every minute that you can take advantage of. So this is the kind of attitudes that we're promoted as having, you know. See, our whole society, our whole education system, our whole social structure, corporate structure, business structure, political structure, is all designed to breed sociopathic people who always see personal acquisition as the meaning of life, and they always acquire this stuff that they acquire at the expense of everybody else around them and at the expense of the planet they live on. And they're trained to be that way. And that's the exact opposite of what people are. People are naturally caring and nurturing and loving. If you leave them to their own devices, they just want to help each other and get along with each other and smile and kick back, you know?
Your car can break down in any road in any country in the world. You can be guaranteed anybody who's nearby, if you approach them for help, they'll probably help you, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. People are naturally caring and nurturing.
And we want some people to actually call in on this. If you actually had an experience where somebody's done something nice for you, just, you know, just cause, 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Tell us what you're getting up to, this Easter weekend. And, I don't know, what are you getting up to this Easter weekend, Max? Apparently there's some big jazz festival coming on. There's going to be like an extra 70,000 people in town.
Oh, Blues Festival, Byron Blues Festival started yesterday. It goes for 5 days. Mega. I mean, we've got Cold Chisel, famous Australian band, playing there. We've got G3, which is Joe Satriani and Steve Vai. We've got the John Butler Trio. I mean, everybody. Yes, are actually playing there. You know, Crosby, Stills, Nash. I mean, like everybody. It's a 5-day. Blues Festival, bands that you've probably always wanted to see but never got a chance to see. Donovan's playing. I mean, everybody's playing. Yeah, and there'll be usually you get an extra 70,000 people around town at that time. Fortunately, they've moved the festival about 10 kilometres away from the town that I live in now. Up to 2 years ago, it used to be actually held in the paddock next door to my little cabin.
Oh, my God.
Which was pretty wild, you know, and we used to have thousands of people come wandering through the yard, and it's just out of control. So it's kind of good that they've moved it out of town a little bit. But that's what's going on here. I don't know whether I'll be going, but there's only really a couple of bands I want to see, and I can't really justify the cost of going in just to see a couple of bands. But it'll be raining. Everyone will have their gumboots on. They'll be walking through paddocks and huge fields of mud, like they are every Easter in Byron Bay, and it'll be fun for lots of people.
All right, well, we'll go to our first caller then. Tim in Wisconsin, welcome to the program. What are you doing this Easter?
I was just starting to make something to eat. But the thing that I felt like wanting to say is that besides all the good points that Max, you know, also brought up, also another one of his shows that I liked on, I'm quite sure, was on American Voice Radio, was his show about fracking. I thought that was a good one, and after, you know, hearing him do that show, I just reconnect, you know, feeling too that that's something that's also really important to, you know, for everybody to help, you know, get stopped.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Fracking is one of the most important issues that we face. It's one of the most important problems that we face. Fracking is absolutely destroying the water table. And it all comes down to Agenda 21, really. I mean, we don't need the gas. We don't need that for energy. There's all sorts of energy devices, wind devices, solar devices. The energy device that Justin Hall Tipping demonstrated at TED Talks, a carbon energy device. I mean, there's so many ways we can get energy. We don't need the gas. So it's not being done for the gas. It's being done to destroy the water table, to force people into concentrated pockets of civilization, Agenda 21. This is exactly what they're doing, and that's exactly what it's all about. It's a huge issue, and it's a global issue. And in many ways, I see it as a gift because it is, you know, it's an issue that will unite humanity. It absolutely will, because water is the most precious resource we have on this planet. And when people suddenly realize, when it really dawns on them that the government and the banksters are prepared to trash the water table in order to support a fictional economy, then I think the penny will drop with a lot of people. You know, we can't destroy our water simply to balance the books. It doesn't work, you know.
Yeah, it just doesn't hold water.
Well, nothing will hold water when they finish, mate, especially the earth. Yeah, that's the thing.
Oh, yeah. They're starting to do fracking now in New Zealand. They've already begun down Taranaki, right? And down in the south near Christchurch, where all this earthquake stuff's been happening as well, they're going to start doing fracking there too and contaminate their massive streams and waterways. And it's just like people are saying, well, oh, my God, they're so greedy. They want the money. They don't want the money. They want you out of there.
Exactly. It's not about the money. The money's fiction. They just make it up. I mean, it's just stuff we made up. It's not about money. It's about the water table. That's what fracking's doing. See, the important thing for people to understand here is that we don't need the gas. There are a myriad of alternative energy systems that we could use. We do not need the gas. So why are they doing it? What is the result of them doing it? Well, it's destroying the aquifers, so that's why they're doing it. That's all the only reason they're doing it, because we don't need the gas, you know. So people need to really get that to sink into their heads. You know, all of these people living in country areas and rural areas, you're not going to have a water table beneath your ground if you don't stop the government fracking, because it's destroying the water table. That's it. That's a given. It's a no-brainer that that's what it's doing. And this is why they went into Libya. That's the biggest aquifer in the world. You know, they want to take control of water and then destroy that which they don't control so that no one else can have any, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
it's all
yeah.
about business. It's an industry, the human human industry, you know?
I can drive as far as I want and I'm rich as all hell, but I can't buy any food and I can't get any water and I can't breathe the air.
Yeah, yeah, wonderful future. Unless you live in one of these big concentrated cities that they're doing. Did you see the film The Hunger Games?
Oh, yeah.
Now, that is Agenda 21. That is absolutely Agenda 21. You've got these mega cities connected by monorails. Nature's taken back all the rest of the country. And you've got people living in mining regions and fishing regions who live in abject poverty, who have to basically forfeit one of their children if they ask for any extra food. You know what I mean? So food is totally rationed out to these people. And, yeah, it's absolutely Agenda 21. And that's where they're going. Yeah, and they create a world where you'll have to do what you're told because they have to bring you water and stuff because you're not going to be able to have any water where you are. You're going to be living in a cesspool. You know, they're turning the whole place into an open cut mine, really. Anywhere that isn't city or isn't nature that they can regenerate so they can exploit later, then the rest of it will be mined, and that's the only place people will be in the mega cities or be in the mining or fishing or industry regions. And these people will be living in abject poverty. And that's exactly what they're doing. It's exactly where they're heading. And I'm amazed, actually, that they put it all in that film. But that's Agenda 21.
Oh, they have to tell you what they're going to do. It's part of their code, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it would seem that way very much, mate. It does help the ritual work a little bit better. But it's also predictive programming. And I thought it was interesting in that film that these people were required to offer up tributes because of the uprising. You know, the uprising. So they're looking at now. If you uprise now, if you rebel against the system now, this is what we're going to be doing to you 75 years from now. So interesting programming there.
Yeah, well, and the film is set several hundred years in the future. So what we're talking about here is an uprising that happens round about the time that we're living in, and a few hundred years later, that's what they're going to have been living like for the last few hundred years. Like, yeah. We're talking about that system being implemented very shortly, according to the timeline of the film.
Well, I mean, that's what they're doing now. That's what fracking's all about. It's about destroying the water table to create exactly that type of a situation. I mean, if you've got no water except in the big cities where they have recycled water and they have huge reservoirs, maybe collecting from lakes or streams or rivers that are nearby, or even desalination or whatever, as long as it's concentrated in that mega city, you know, you let the rest of the country come back. That's the only place you're going to get water. So, what are you going to do? If you want to live in Byron Bay here and the water table's polluted, what are you going to do? You're not going to be able to live here. You can, but you won't live very long because you won't have any water to drink. And you need water. Water is the most valuable resource on this planet, you know? And yet they're destroying the water table to support an economy, you know, and they're driving people out of the country by doing it. And you see so many farmers selling their lands. They're all being bought by mining companies. So where's all the food going to come from? So you'll have to.
Yeah, they're either being bought by mining companies or Monsanto kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, you're going to have to import food from other countries. So what they also do with this is they make it so that every country cannot sustain itself. Every country is dependent upon every other country. So no one can break away from the system. Because if you do, you won't have oil or you won't have food or you won't have water or you won't have whatever it is that you import from other countries via the medium of the United Nations. You know what I'm saying? You know, the common market and all this sort of stuff. This is all about controlling the flow of resources and making countries interdependent upon each other. Okay? So that way no one can break out of the system. If you've got a country that's completely self-sufficient, you can't control that country. So they need to have every country dependent upon every other country. So the global government's already here. It's just consolidating itself. It's been here for a long time. It's just been hidden behind the scenes. And what's happening now is it's becoming more transparent. It's becoming more open in your face because they've got to the point now where they can't really consolidate anymore without it people seeing it, you know. So people are seeing it.
Oh yeah, the emperor truly wears no clothes. We can see his ding a ling. Call in, ladies and gentlemen, 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Last chance to call in over the break. Back in a minute.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the future, from Chateau de Rothschild, nestled deep in the heart of Auckland City, New Zealand. We have a very special guest, who's the godfather of Australian conspiracy and transhumanism. It's Max Egan. Welcome back.
Nice to be back, Vinny. Interesting throat problem you've got happening there.
Thank you.
Okay. Speaking of transhumanism, it's one of the most interesting forms of ism, but not the stickiest kind. Is there, you've got a new film, right? But you're telling me over the break that you're worried about releasing it because it might freak people out.
Well, you know, there's a lot of information in there that's a little bit unsettling for people. I mean, it's stuff that people need to know. And again, I see it all as opportunity. But, I just sort of wonder, you know, if people really know what's going on around the place. I mean, a lot of them might get a little bit nervous about the whole thing. So I'm kind of wondering about it. I've got it finished. I mean, I've got it all here. I've got the final render here sitting on my desktop. I watched it last night. And, I could upload it today. But, I've decided to leave it till April 15th. I want to also do, a bonus disc so that people who do get it on DVD will get a bonus disc that goes with it, which will have, a few further explanations that I was going to include in the film, but I left out because it was starting to get too long. The film is an hour and 37 minutes now, so it's the longest one that I've done. a little bit arty, but I'm kind of arty. That's what I like to do, you know. I mean, really, if you listen to a lot of the radio shows, a lot of the shows have had a lot of information packed into them, and each one of those radio shows I could have expanded into a film. And that's one of the reasons it's taken me this long to do the film, because every time I'd get an idea that I wanted to include in the film, I'd end up talking about it on the radio that week. And so that was the end of that. Already done that one, you know.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, so, you know, the shows are there for all the information that I'm talking about and all that sort of stuff. So the film has been done more for me than anything, just because I like the artiness. I like creating titles. I like doing the credits. I like creating the music and piecing it all together and doing the editing and just creating the picture, you know. So the film has been sort of done for me more than anything. But it does contain some information that may freak a few people out. But, I mean, again, it's all important information. If you don't know what the problem is, then you can't address the problem. And all is not lost yet. We still have plenty of hope, and we still have plenty of ways of fixing things. But we're not going to be able to fix them unless people know what the problem is. So that's what I've tried to do with the film. I mean, the first section of the film is basically just asking people to question things, question their reality, question the past, question how they got there. I mean, I ask a lot of questions in it. I'm not trying to answer the questions. I just think it's important for people to ask the questions. That's sometimes where the true enlightenment comes. It isn't from the answer. It's from the act of asking the question. That activates the mind enough, the fact that the question exists. And then the second part of the film deals with the transhuman agenda and how it's being presented to the world. The third part of the film deals with how they are attempting to go about it and implement the transhumanist agenda. And the fourth part of the film basically tries to provide a bit of hope and show us what steps we can take to avoid going in the direction that they are attempting to take us into. And the whole transhumanist agenda, it all ties in with Agenda 21. It ties in with the cashless society, microchipping, the whole lot. I mean, it all fits together. The whole digital reality, that, you know, everything that they're doing, it all ties together. The chemtrails, transhumanism, the fracking, everything, it all ties together into one thing when you step back and look at the picture. And when you do and you add all the dots and you just connect all the dots, you go, well, here's where we're going, here's what they're doing, and what can we do about it? That's the thing. And there's a lot of people out there, you know, so many people are distracted at the moment. People are distracted by everything that's going on around them. All these people are waiting, they're not doing anything because they perceive that all these mass arrests are going to happen soon. Other people that are sitting there waiting for the rapture, other people that are waiting for a big cataclysm at the end of the year, so they're not doing anything. You've got other people from the spiritual movement that are just kind of sitting around waiting for a shift to happen. No one's participating in reality around them. Everybody's waiting and everyone's trained to want to go to fifth dimension or want to go to heaven or wherever they're going and to ignore the reality that they're in right now. They go, oh, it's okay. Well, this reality is just turning to hell anyway. Well, it's only turning to hell because you're not participating in it. You know, if everyone was to participate in reality, start seeing everybody around them as valid and start standing up against this system, you know, realizing that it's fiction and they can stand up against it because it doesn't exist. It's just an idea. What exists is the people. And if we started supporting each other, we could take things in a completely different direction. So the more you fail to participate in the reality around you, the more it turns to hell and the more you want to go to heaven. But, you know, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And people, yeah, want to ascend, they want consciousness.
People are waiting around. They're waiting around for this shift, right? And they say, oh, shift happens, so we're just going to wait for it. And I say, no, shift doesn't happen. It only happens when you get your shift together.
Yeah, you've got to participate. You've absolutely got to participate in reality around you. That's what people are failing to do. And you know, if you're in this state of love and this state of oneness and you're seeing the people around you as yourself, then why is there suffering in the world? And if there is suffering in the world, perhaps it's because you're failing to participate, to alleviate that suffering. Because if we're all each other, if we are literally all one, then even the bad guys are us, part of that same consciousness. They need love as much as anybody, even if they are psychopathic. You know, we can just allow them to be psychopaths by themselves. We don't have to participate in the reality that they create, you know. And they've created this reality because the psychopaths always maneuver themselves to the top of the food chain so they control everybody else. So we're all living within this psychopathic society, and it keeps us divided from each other and allows each of us to suffer under the weight of this society, and all we have to do is turn away from it. All we have to do is start participating in reality around us and seeing each other as valid. I mean, it always comes back to the same thing.
I was talking to a dude the other night, and I've had countless conversations like this, where they tell me that they're in situations where they're living with crackheads or people who steal from them or assault them or things like that. And every single one of them, I tell them the same thing. Get out of there. Okay. If you're in those negative situations, don't stay, because you're only going to wind up draining your energy trying to either get back at them or try and defend yourself against the inevitable coming onslaughts of scumbaggery. Okay. Stop putting yourself in that situation. Find some people who actually care about you. Find some people you can actually be comfortable with. There's 7 billion people on the planet. They can't be that hard to find.
Well, exactly. Exactly. You know, and a lot of it is the energy you're in as well, you know. You know, a lot of us are in a victim mentality, and so we attract people that treat us like victims. And, you know, if you're in a victim mentality, you're going to get downtrodden, and you're going to have people that are going to treat you that way. You've got to lead by example. You've got to be in the energetic state, you know, the correct energetic state. You've got to realize that you attract things into your life because you need that information. But now, okay, you're in a violent situation, you're in a violent relationship, or you're living in a house where people are stealing off you and treating you like whatever. Then, okay, well, now you know that exists. Now you know that these sort of people exist. Like you say, Vinny, move out. Do something else. There are 7 billion people on the planet. Surely there's somewhere else to go. And if your life isn't going the direction that you think it should be going, and you continue to do the things you've always done, well, then it's going to continue to not go in the direction you think it should be going. You know, it's only gone in that direction because of the things you've done that have led to that point. Whether it's been your choice or not, whether you've just been tossed around like a leaf on the stream, it doesn't matter. It's still, you know, the choices and the directions that you have personally gone that have created that situation. So you need to change that. Change what you do. Change your perspective of reality. You know, step away from it. Do something else. It's really not hard to do. I mean, I've done so many different things in my life and been in so many different situations. And, you know, looking back, I treasure every one of them, no matter how bad they were, because they all made me who I am now. And without that information, I couldn't be who I am now. So it all serves a purpose. It's what you do with that purpose. It's, if you're in that state where you are a victim, then that's an opportunity for you to change that. But you have to participate. Again, you've got to participate. No one's going to come and save you. You have to participate in your own reality. And, you know, that's the microcosm, but put that on the macrocosm. As humanity as a whole, the world's going to hell in a handbasket because we're failing to participate in the reality around us. We're just obedient little drones. We do what we're told. Even if we're told to abuse our neighbors and throw people out of their houses and do stuff that doesn't serve humanity but only serves the system, we still do it because we're told to do it. We're just obedient little drones. We need to change that, you know, come into who and what we are.
Yeah. Got to stop making excuses, eh?
And, well, we do, mate.
Well, the last thing that I wanted to mention here is that people often come up with a lot of problems in their minds, and they think about those problems as an excuse or a reason to not do the things that they want to do. I can't do this because of such and such a reason or whatever. Stop doing that, okay? Trust me. It's much better to deal with consequences after you've actually done something than to think about the consequences and wind up doing nothing.
Well, again, it's yardsticks, Vinny. You know, people are given yardsticks. I'm going to be like this if I do this, or this is going to happen, because, you know, they don't act spontaneously. They don't follow their intuition. They you know, operate within the parameters that society has set for them.
Yeah. Well, I think we can break free. You know, every single one of us that has woken up today, well, with the exception of a few like you, Max, was brainwashed once upon a time, and now no longer is. And we're fighting, and we're making something better happen. Okay, and that's despite the huge amount of brainwashing, huge amount of poisoning, we still woke up, and we're still making a difference anyway. That's how strong we are, and that is how weak our masters truly are at the end of the day, and all we need to do is wake up and realize it and make it happen the way we want it to, the way it should. Thanks, Max, for coming on, mate, and you enjoy yourself a very, very happy Easter.
My pleasure. You too, Vic.